within the surgical setting. I can here I have an advantage, right? Over, for example, Itai, I can put the theory which I'm working with in this alpha lab, right? So it's kind of a very nice, very elegant equation for the Lagrangian density, which involves only two parameters. One of the WC is the mass, and another is the electron charge, right? So and it's very short and nice and elegant equation. The question is how accurate it is. And yeah, this is, I will try to answer this question short, right? So just to give you a feeling, I'm going to consider two different determinations of the pi structure constant from two different bound state of the single layer, from Kalmuchin and from German. Okay. And let's start with the hydrogen. And the most accurately measured quantity of hydrogen spectroscopy is the Ritter constant. I hope you still remember from the quantum mechanical course what it is. But I don't, right? So you can see, if you just look at this equation, you see that it has a dimensional frequency. Right? Basically, this quantity sets the scale of frequency for the whole hydrogen spectroscopy, right? And by studying the spectra of hydrogen, of deuterium, of helium ion, you can somehow isolate the hadronic effect for quantum nucleus, so you get rid of them. And in principle, you can extract this Ritter constant with an accuracy, I think, 10 to the minus 11. Right? It's pretty ridiculous, right? So, and you can see from this expression that it's proportional to alpha squared, right? So, unfortunately, one cannot immediately get alpha from this measurement because it grapples the electron mass and the Planck constant, right? And you know that separately, the Planck constant and the electron mass are known with the accuracy of about 10 to the minus 8. And this spoils the picture. But fortunately, so you cannot measure MP and H bar sufficiently accurately. The combination of MU over H bar that you measured with very high accuracy is really kind of ingenious trick. And this ingenious trick consists of two steps. So the first step, people measure the ratio of the electron mass to the mass of rubidium ion. And it's done simply by measuring the corresponding spectral frequencies, right? So the spectral frequency is inverse proportional to the mass, right? And by forming this ratio, measuring these frequencies, one gets this. The frequency is something that I mentioned, what experimenters can measure with practically accurate frequencies, right? So after getting this ratio, people measure actually the ratios of Planck constant to the rubidium mass. And this is done also in a very elegant way. Basically, people study the recoil process. So you have an excited atom of rubidium, it emits a photon, and it starts to move in the opposite direction with some velocity. Right? And here, I mean, this equation is just a momentum conservation, right, divided by the rubidium mass. So this is momentum of the photon, and here, this mass is the momentum of rubidium. So, and this is the wave number of the photon, so you can measure its frequency measurement. And this is the velocity, and velocity can also be measured with very high accuracy because it can be reduced to the measuring frequency, very much like, you know, the policeman when he catches you up on the highway for speeding, you can talk to your radar, and something like this, they can resume you, right? You see, so here, this ratio is the ratio of frequencies you substituted here. You have another ratio of frequencies you substituted here. So this is the frequency. Here, what is left is alpha squared times the ratio of frequencies. So everything is can be measured after all with very high accuracy, which I will show you a little bit later. Right, so let me consider the second example. And the second example is related to the study of the anomalous momentum magnetic moment of electric field. I think from the course, quantum mechanics is to remember that an electron has its proper magnetic moment, which is proportional to its spin, and here you have a special vector, which involves the dimensionless parameter G, which is German equation. Okay. And in principle, if you look at the Dirac equation, G is equal to 2. If you take into account depth of quantum electrodynamics, it's certainly big, Pro 2, so and it can be computed with a series in all kinds, in the fine structure, sorry, no, the fine structure. So, and the series is actually known after the peaks, and due to the effort of heroic effort, I would say, of Kinoshita and his group. So, it's known very well in quantum electrodynamics. And on the other hand, if you look at the general spectrum, if you take the ratio of the frequency which is related to the spin field and divided by the frequency, the standard symmetric frequency, electron, you exactly get this question. So the measurement is again the measurement of the ratio of frequencies which can be done with the very computers. So what is the outcome for all this exercise? You can see here, and actually this is the answer to this global question. So if you look at the Huygens spectrum and the Rydberg equal, you get this number. If you look at the electron level standard model, you get this number. If you can quickly count the digits, I mean here you can see 9 digits, right? And the discrepancy is only 10^-10. And it's well inside the experimental reference. So, I mean, now you should think how different are the systems, how different are the theory you describe the system, I mean, particular realization of quantum mechanics, right? And then you can see, yeah, that's really impressive, right? So,
this is average of both the German geometric spectrum, or this is the German spectrum?
No, this is, I mean, they're the same, right? So you put... So, I mean, it's like here, I mean, the you is, combine it, right? So this is two different experiments.
So, to not computation, it does include QCD loops, right?
Sorry?
It does include...
Which one?
The Kinoshita computation.
It's you go to beyond the QCD loops?
Yeah.
No,
I thought
it's. I mean, they in principle they. I mean, it's size four.
Okay, so it's all of this is QED.
So this is a big success of quantum electrodynamics, but I mean, it would not be fair not to mention the problems which quantum electrodynamics has. And I think the biggest problem so far is related to recent measurement of proton charge radius in Munich hydrogen. You probably are aware of this fact that there is about 7 sigma mismatch of the proton charge radius measured for the hydrogen and non-hydrogen junction. Right. So, again, just let me remind you, proton charge radius is some phenological parameter which describes how the charge is distributed inside the particle, okay. And you basically this charge distribution affects the energy of the S state, for which the wave function doesn't change its origin, right? So it affects the lamp shift, and for the ion hydrogen, it affects the lamp shift to much high extent because the ion is much closer, it's heavier, it's closer to the proton, and it's easily roughly speaking by the right, so, you can basically, by using the highly 3D prediction, extract the proton charge radius from the hydrogen lamp shift, from the hydrogen lamp shift, you can compare that, and you can compare the discrepancy. If you ask me what is the origin of the discrepancy, I can tell you only that I don't know. You would quite ask me to but actually, I was really concerned with this problem, because I no idea how one can explain this. But it actually showed me actually the experimental data yesterday on the coverage lamp shift, and it turns out that if you consider each of the experimental data, this frequency is not larger than 2C. So if you add up, if you average over the experiments, adding up the errors and quadrishes, you get this stunning 7C. And I'm a little bit, you know, uncomfortable with averaging the systematic errors and quadrishes, right? Like, so, I mean, it could very well be that the 7C is actually not 7C. So, but anyhow, let me now turn to actually the main subject of my talk, and this is the Bitcoin box. So it's basically a bound state of electronic fundamental. And this is a pure QDCC. What do I mean by this? It means that all harmonic effects are series suppressed, right? So they're suppressed by the square of the mass of the electron divided by the square of the mass of the photon state. So it's practically zero, it doesn't, and it enters only probably at the level of all QDCCs, right? So zero. So it can exist in spin 1 order or spin 0 part states, and it decays, as I mentioned, with the photons. So the part-positron decays in an even number of photons, just by CP symmetry. And orthopositron decays in the odd number of photons, starting from 3, because it cannot be 1. So, and the best observables from the experimental point of view in this system are the orthopositron decays. And the hyperfine splitting. The hyperfine splitting is just the difference between the energy of the order and power state. Right? So for most quantities, the QD prediction is known to the order of Q, including only the derivative between half carriage. So there is no derivative of the half. So now, if you compare it to the anomalous magnetic moment, for the anomalous magnetic moment, the related alpha and force corrections are done. Right? Because it's 5 loop and it starts with 1. So now you may ask me, why should I look at the positronium system when the QD is somehow proved in this anomalous magnetic moment system with already high loops? And the answer is very simple. Orthopositronium has the same quantum numbers as a photon, right? So it can, in principle, annihilate into a single off-shell quark, off-shell photon. And this is a three-level process. So, in principle, any new physics which affects quark off-shell photon propagating will be visible in the positronium and still do not contribute to the electromagnetism. So we somehow.
So do you have in mind something like connected mixed A prime of this
next step? So basically, you know, I hate new physics. I do not advocate it.
What? No, good enough for you.
But I can put it good. So I love to so I don't have any name of these models, but I'm just to give you a feeling what kind of models can explain the kind of deviation from QD prediction here. One is a model which was kind of very popular a few years ago. It's larger extra dimensions. Basically modify the gravitational potential at the very short distance, so K is some large number here. And it was shown by Rubakov and Dubovsky. Then in this kind of system, the off-shell photon propagator is affected, right? So it's modified. And modifications from that either is modified by this K, and you can just look at how it affects this off-shell propagator with which the orthopositron state mixes, right? This is also particular to the modification of the orthopositron indicators, right? So another example is that
I don't understand that.
Yes. You like basically you can have the following process. Markov zitronium oscillates into the offshell phelon, and offshell phelon escapes into the extra dimension. So,
but I thought, okay, but in those large extra dimensional scenarios, like the AED, the phelon, only the graviton uses that.
No, infinite. No, it's like Randall's
number. Yeah.
So, and again, it can give you a reference, like, not only
massive
network may escape into the extra dimension, like, it's localization's question. So, I must also say that in this case, on-shell propagator is not a thing. So, another possible candidate for new physics, which can be usable, is the parallel system with a kinetic mixing of a normal photon in this dark or mirror, whatever you want, photon, which actually becomes also popular now. already quite a long time ago, Leshow just analyzed this process, and it's shown that you have this mixing, kinetic mixing, suppressed by some small number epsilon, so you have correction to the hyperfine splitting, also proportional to epsilon. So it's pretty. So, and because of this, of course, people very enthusiastically looked for deviation of prediction from experimental.
So, in principle, that sort of thing also affects at one loop the electron given screw.
Yes, this the question is because this guy, I mean, you diagonalize the kinetic operator. So the far off shell you go, the more effect you have.
Right.
So
it's saying if it's massive, if that guy is massive enough, the effect on the given screw is smaller. The effect of
So, let me repeat that people very enthusiastically look for deviations of theory from.
Sorry, I didn't see that. Because both molecules and electron g minus 2 involve a photon with a virtuality of order.
Say that the on shell photon is just our own photon. So if that is proportional to the off-shell, it's to the photon. So when you consider muon g minus 2, you have electron g minus 2, you have the main contribution, and it's finite, right? It's one loop, and it's finite. So the main contribution comes from sufficiently small off-shell to the photon. For the order of the zitronium,
the
photon is
off-shell
by 2m.
Yeah, of order n electron. Okay.
So it's like a numerical factor, which may be like 10 or something like this, right? And then you can look at,
but it's dominated by virtuality of order and electron.
Yes. Yeah. But I mean, again, since, I mean, you would be absolutely correct if we consider like corrections which have to be renormalized, right? But the electron g minus 2, it's finite, so the contribution of large moment and large shells is somehow suppressed. Power suppressed. So everything comes from 0 to ME. And here, and for the positronium, we have like 1 ME more, right? So it's 2 ME of shell. So this is how it works.
But I guess what I'm saying, it sounds like it's a numerical
difference. It's not
parametric.
It's not parametric. It's bigger than we use here. So again, you can fine tune and model and whatever. So basically, you explore, it's just two models, right? You explore the deviation of the photon propagator when you go offshore from the standard function. This is very good. So, people look for a first deviation, and like in the early 80s, they found like 5 sigma mismatch between 0 and experiment in gamma zirconium, and about 25 sigma mismatch for hyperfine speed. And it somehow fueled the research of new physics experiment model building for almost 20 years. But 10 years ago, in 2003, I was kind of very funny change of the whole picture with the orbital zirconium lifetime.
Sorry, actually, quick question going back to what I was asking earlier. I would have expected the characteristic virtuality scale for orthopositronium to be the size, which is alpha of electron.
No.
So why?
Because, like, you see, it's...
Because you said this,
you
is,
have,
so, this is in the annihilation
It's
process.
Annihilation.
Okay.
So, yeah, you have U squared equal to 4.
Right.
And
no, that's
three.
Right.
So, was it 8?
Yeah.
So, and it turns out, I mean, basically the ANA group, which actually performed the most accurate version of the changed the result by 5 sigma. And it perfectly agreed with the theoretical prediction. Right. And it's a kind of very pedagogical situation. So I'm going to spend like a couple of minutes explaining what was wrong with the calculation. So you see, this is an experiment from 1990, and this is an experiment from 2003. So basically, the positrons are ejected inside the chamber, the gauge electron band, then they annihilate, and basically what is measured is the flash spread. So then the time between crossing this gate and the flash spreads. Basically, so can anybody actually find the difference between this and this experiment? So that.
And we don't know what is the size of the cavity.
I mean, the obvious...
Right, say it's 1.5 centimeters.
I mean, the main difference is that here, the positron turns around the corner. And it turned out that, basically what happens here, I mean, some electrons like catch positron and bounce back and leave the chamber through this very small hole designed to inject positrons instead. So, and this is a perfect emulation of experimental universe, whatever, I mean, because it's not detected anymore. So, after they corrected their experiment, right, and they got a perfect agreement with theory. So, this one of the puzzles has been resolved. So, but the second puzzle still is, and let me basically describe what is the current situation. It's also not a kind of ambiguous now. Here you can see basically the plot where there's all necessary information. So this and these are old measurements from the 80s, right? So this is the theoretical band. And the band is due to this unknown benefits of the condition in the hypermaximum. So, there is a huge difference. It's not like in the case of probability. You clearly see that there is about 2.5 sigma difference. But last year, actually, last October, there was a publication by a Japanese group. And what they found a different number, which is also 1 sigma away from the theory, but on the other side. And now the situation is still ambiguous, right? But the puzzle exists, but the puzzle is of a little bit different flavor. Right, nobody knows which experiment is correct. So now, I know at least three groups are trying to do the experiment, the new experiments, using different technologies. So I hope that in some future, if not so remote, right, so we will have a resolution of this contradiction. And also, the experimental accuracy will be increased. So at this point, it's kind of mandatory to reduce the removal band, right? To see whether you have any contradiction, right? And this is what actually we are going to do. Right?
So in that plot, where is the theory prediction?
Yeah, this band.
This band.
This band is
and
here.
The light gray band of the previous average is missing.
This is a version of old one, right? So this is a new one. I do not average this with this. It's of no sense. Right? Yeah. So and this is the theory band. Again, if you compute the longer you study the correction, it will be a line, it will not be a vector. So it's sensible. The whole exercise is sensible, so I'm going to...
But, sorry, those experiments are qualitatively different, or... I mean, they want to experiment...
You mean technology
yeah.
is the same, but these guys claim that they take into account accurate formalization of positronium. Don't ask me what this means, right? I have no idea. But they basically claim that they exclude some systematic.
Mm-hmm.
But even not exclude some systematic, because systematic is still large, but they took into account some systematic shift.
Okay.
This is. Okay, so. And I'm going to talk about basically field corrections. So let me start with some Bohm diagrams. So, what is the origin of the hyperfine speed? Right? The origin is very simple. I mean, first of all, you have the annihilation process, right? And as I mentioned, the quantum positronium can annihilate it with simple photon. Power system panels gives you a different shifting it gives you the difference between the energies, right? So, and also if you have magnetic photon exchange, I mean it depends on spin, so it affects in a different way on the power state. So if you just do the standard perturbation theory with the rate Hamiltonian, with the obviously this is the rate Hamiltonian, so this is the contribution from scattering, this is the contribution from annihilation. So the process is local, like in the Hamiltonian flow, the operator local, in proportion to square of the spin. So you have a delta function here, and if you average, it's very easy, right? The result of the version would be just the wave function of the origin, because you have a delta function here. So the wave function of the origin of Coulombic state is proportional to alpha cube, right? So you have an additional alpha from these guys, so you have an effect of alpha to the force. Right? So you have here alpha to the force, and you have some numbers for to these diagrams. So of course it's a very rough approximation, so much effort has been invested, right, to improve this estimate, and here you can see the list of people who contributed. Here you can find the top guys like Dev Landau, Peter Lipash. Yeah. So it's really, I'm very proud of doing this. Right? So, and the result of this common effort is this formula. Right, so this is the hyperfine splitting, so this is a really good result, which you have already seen. And you have all the connections. Up to alpha cube log up. This guy is alpha. And if you look, for example, at the second order correction, you see an interesting effect. The second order correction is dominated by the scattering contribution. So you just can just specify according to the topologies, right? The scattering, you have one photon annihilation, you have two photon annihilations, three and so on. Right, so if you look at that anatomy of the second order equation, like the half of it comes from the scattering contribution. And about the third comes from one photon contribution, so multiple effects are small. So I mean obviously I mean to get this E pretty little less than the E one because we consider the difference. So we decided to go with this one because it's simpler, right? I'm just going to tell you how we get the result for the one photon annihilation contribution.
So can you say something about so the first line with the alpha correction?
Yeah.
That's the one loop correction to the diagram you just showed.
Yes.
And is there the two terms in the brackets have any physical separate meaning, or is it just like the log 2 and the 32 over 21?
No,
they're just a combination of
I think this log 2 comes from two photon annihilation. You can trace it here, but if you go to parallelism, everything is mixed.
Yeah.
Okay, so And you can imagine this is the real set of the QED, and you have to develop your perturbation theory, not about the free electrons, right? You have to develop the perturbation theory about the bond state.
It's not a full contribution to you that you're going to be describing.
Yes.
So we don't really know.
Not yet. Yeah, so no, I mean, work is going, right? This is the first work. But I will tell you one thing. Okay, let's postpone to that, right? So, so it's a kind of optimal compilation, and I can give you a kind of formal success for this kind of business. And it's highlighted here. So if you merge the constant of technical theory with dimensional regularization, you get what you want. And let me elaborate on this. I mean, I don't want to be very technical because of time is going. So just a general idea of how it's done. Of course, we have a multi-scale problem, right? So we have different scales. The bond state. You have a hard scale, which is roughly speaking the mass of the the soft scale, which is electron velocity, it's bound electron momentum, right? So velocity as this, and this is the bond state energy, like the energy of bounded electron. So you have scale hierarchy, and if you practice any experience with the multiple population, if you have multiple scales, finding the most whatever the problem, it's basically very difficult to approach. So the idea is, and of course, how can we describe the bond state? The only way to describe the bond state mathematically is to solve the Schrödinger equation. So we have to make a bridge between the quantum electrodynamics, the full theory, full correct laws of variance theory of quantum electrodynamics, and Schrödinger equation, basically Newtonian system. So, we basically, the Newtonian system describes the non-relativistic electrons with this kind of three momentum and this kind of energy, right? So, we basically have to remove everything which is current. And again, you know that the idea of how we do this is very well known. It's a concept of the theory. You should basically integrate out the hard modes and leave one soft modes early. What's called potential modes. When the energy is like scales like this and the theoretical scales like this, it's called potential, right? So you have to leave on the potential for the potential electrons in your new system as a physical unit. So, and this is basically how one, what this theory of potential relativity is in that, right? So, to be more specific, right? So, let me show this slide, right? So, you start with Lagrangian multiplier. You start with the direction of quantum electrodynamics, right? So you integrate out the thermals. The moles is virtual rate of order of MP. Right? What does it mean you integrate out? Basically, you compute loops with such particles, right? These electrons, which is integral. Instead of fully relativistic dense spirals, you have to consider non-relativistic components, right? The power spirals, right? So instead of this guy, you have a Lagrangian, which of course includes the new operators and all the information about the particles sitting here, right? Sitting inside the recent conditions of these operators. Right, but this is not still the Hamiltonian system, right? Because in this covariant derivative, you have soft photons. The photons with energy momentum scaling like B times E. B times M. So you don't have it in your Schrödinger theory. In string theory, you have only potential between electron and proton. So you have to integrate out them as well. So you have to consider all the loops where the momentum of the virtual photons is solved. And then you get rid of all these soft photons here. You get a standard Schrödinger operator plus potential, which I don't indicate here. Like, and you also have multiple interaction, right? Dipole, quadrupole, so interaction of your non-relativistic spiral potential degree of freedom with the ultra soft nuclear photons, right? Ultra soft photons with energy scaling like mv squared, right? So they cannot, I mean, they're so soft, they cannot resolve the structure of the bound state. So they see positronium as a single particle with some dipole, quadrupole, and so on and so on. Right? So, and this is only the theory which you can use to describe the bound state, because it's equivalent to the Schrödinger equation. Again, all the information about carbon bonds are sitting in the high dimensional operators and in the Wilson conditions. So now the question is, okay,
you also you have in the low energy Schrödinger equation, you have local and super local operators that incorporate the Wilson coefficients from. So you have
also you have four fermion operators,
right. And because of the potential, you have delta functions.
You have delta
and
functions.
And delta functions, etc.
Yeah, but not only this, you have only also something like Coulombic potential, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is all local, right? So
right.
You have to compute the missing coefficient to do the calculation. So, but the, I mean, this is a very nice concept, right? But the question is, how to realize this in practice? Because I mean, when I integrate out the carbon ones, I mean, I restrict the virtual momentum to the current region, right? So basically, I may say, well, let's impose some power, let's create the regions of momentum, and try to compute like this. And this is of course the road to nowhere, because I mean, if you have three loops with momentum cutoffs, it's a kind of suicidal cutoff, right? So solution. Is that instead of imposing the cutoff, you shouldn't do this. You should perform the expansion, and for every contribution, for the current contribution, so or alpha soft, whatever, you should perform the integration over the whole region of the whole virtual momentum space. And this way, you will get singularities because you use the expanded expressions in the regions of. A virtual momentum space where the expansion is not a pivot, right? So you will get the divergences, right? But if you use the dimensional realization to regulate the divergences, then add up the contribution from all the regions, from all quantities which you have increased, then you get the correct result. And this is known as a separation of different scales in dimensional regularization. It's a very nice trick, which basically.
But you mean by that, you have some parameters defined for the boundary, and you'll see divergences associated with this parameter. But with
like,
suppose the boundaries, those things will cancel.
Suppose you are computing loops within non-relativistic QC. So in principle, you have to restrict your momentum to some limit between V times M and M, right? You have to impose this boundary. Because above this boundary, your expansion doesn't work. It becomes relativistic, right? The result is that you don't impose this limit. You integrate over the whole virtual momentum region and regulate all the divergences which you face using dimensional regularization. I mean, this is basically this works because the contribution from this wrong regions where this function doesn't work responds to scaleless integrals, which has zero in dimensional regularization. So this is an explanation of how it works. And this is a very powerful thing. I think I could go on for half an hour about this. I think, but this is how the calculation is organized. But let me know. Describe it a bit, some details of the calculation. So basically, you can separate all the corrections into the last one, contribution into the reducible Lipschitz kind of vertex correction and reducible Lipschitz kind of propagator corrections. And I mean, it's quite straightforward, so let's see to get this expression for the direction to supervise. So this is the linear result. And this residue comes from this diagram, and this what I would call polarization function, right, comes from this diagram. Because you have to cost for this kind of diagram, you have to perform the density summation, and it goes to the linear. Right? So this is just notation, but if you employ this effective description, you may relate this quantity R0 and P0 to the bottom polarization function. Very standard torture. It's a correlator of two vector currents. Right? So basically, the R0 is the residue of the bottom polarization function at the energy equal to the Newtonian bound energy. And this is kind of QDT analog of the positronium wave function. So it's pretty relativistic. Analog was a positronium wave function because like the wave function is a residue of the positronium wave, right? So, you can just see, I mean, if you look for the effective partition of this quantity, you have some missing conditions, some numerical factors. So what you have is non-relativistic wave function of the Schrödinger equation. Yep, so it's a very nice analogy. Yeah, so you just solve the Schrödinger equation with an effective iterator, which is how you would, with effective theory, get this open centronium, substitute it here, and then you have done. So, okay. The bottlenecks here are the two bottlenecks. We can just again separate this calculation to different contribution different scales. The hard contribution, where all this magnetic are called FP, is just the hard normalization of the variance. It's pretty difficult to calculate, right? Another bottleneck is results of contribution, because you have to take into account effectively an infinite number of quantum exchanges. Remember that delta photon doesn't dissolve the positronium bound state, so you have to literally use the full positronium Green's function, full positronium propagators. It's also again, all these guys are divergent. When you add them up, the divergence is canceled, you get the final result. For this P0, I mean, the result is a very nice interpretation in terms of the bottom polarization function. It's just a regular plot of the bottom polarization function as a positronium bound combination. And bottleneck here is again the hard single contribution, which has also been done. Whereas, what can I say? I'm running out of time. Yes, so we have a few results here. And you can get, yeah, so if you look at the capability of expansion of these two objects, I mean, we are interested in cellular coefficients, and we can get it almost fully analytically, except these two guys, which these two guys respond to the finite part of the steam part diagrams. So you're going to get the three diagrams, diagrams, and if you add everything up, you get the following. You get the following result. So this is one total annihilation contribution to the coefficient D. So there is some analytic part. It's just randomism. And you have these two numerical constants from the single card diagrams to the resistive card diagrams. And there is a very interesting quantity delta alpha soft here, which basically quantifies alpha soft contribution. The contribution where the positronium emits alpha soft photon, like propagate together with alpha soft photons, and absorbs alpha soft photons. So, okay. You consider the propagation of the bound state, not just everything. Right, and it's like quaternary. Remember that D multiplies alpha cubed over pi cubed. So what you have actually at the end, you have alpha cubed, like the expansion, the expansion parameter in this standard form. It's not alpha over pi, it's just alpha. So it looks like this, and this means that the corrections could be really large, much larger than, for example, in the case of the most abundant one, which is good in this calculation. Right? So, if you just have a look, I mean, this the most of this, I think, 80, which is 84, comes from this opposite computation. So it's kind of the most important part of the sort of corrections, one of the relation corrections. What is interesting is that for the statement contribution, you have very similar levels of corrections. You're kind of not sensitive to whether you have a scattering or whether you have an annihilation, because it's too soft. You cannot just hook too deep, right? It's too soft. So you have very similar corrections. So if you just estimate, so you may have an idea. Maybe the for the statement contribution, this opposite is also gives a domain, right? So if you make this assumption, so you get this kind of contribution to the statement amplitude, right, to the statement process. And again, if you compare, for example, to the contribution with E through the electron G minus 2, because basically, contribution to the past is in the G minus 2, so it's equal to 1. Right, so it's really literally, I mean, it seems that you catch the biggest part of the direction in this way. So, and now, this is almost the final slide, right? So you see, if you have good optics, right, you can see the result of our efforts. So the previous theoretical variable is this blue point, and it's shifted to the red point. Right, and surprisingly, it gets practically within, obviously it moves in the direction of this experiment. So, but again, nobody knows what is the real correction until this happens. Right, so it's still what we...
The size of those optically indiscernible cubes is the error?
No, just to make it visible.
Okay.
So the error would be less, because if we complete the calculation, the error you do not see, you would just plot it like this.
But so the error right now means the difference between those?
Yes, two. Exactly.
So in this red dot, does it include the estimate?
No, it doesn't.
It's just it.
It's just, if I would estimate, it will jump right inside the inside the reverse of this experiment.
And you know that the jump is in the same direction.
Yes,
not
yes,
the opposite computer.
Yes,
computer.
Because, yeah, because it's the same computer. I mean, it's basically
right.
Like opposite behavior. So, and so I come to my conclusion. So, okay, this is more or less here. So,
what do you mean? Yeah,
full complexity, because will not need anything new technically to finish the calculation. There are some different parts, like the non-anomalous parameter point contribution, which are much simpler. This calculation involves all the dynamics, all the scales, so it's full complexity. So there is no significant problem here. I mean, so, of course, it's a little bit more difficult than scattering amplitude is a little bit more difficult than annihilation, but still, there is no principle jump. Another conclusion is that ED is doing rather well if you trust the new result. If you trust the old one, conclusion is old, right? So, but I can So, and probably let me finish with a kind of philosophical conclusion. Maybe, but when basically I was through everything as far as the new physics is concerned, we may look for something new in this electrodynamics. So thank you very much.